na. Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivardhani Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivardhani Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Kunja Vihari Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivraja Gacharya Ashtavutara Shatta Sri Srimad Abhaya Charana Ravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Good morning. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada's address to the youth of America in 1968. How old are all those youth now? But it's still relevant even to the youth. What did he say? You're the flowers of your country. What else did he say? How I wish I could be here with you today. The youth, it's not just in America, but all over the world. The youth are neglected, but they are the flowers of society. What else did he say? It was like full of hope and encouragement.
It was brief. Coming to America, meditating and coming to America, fulfilling the order of his spiritual master.
Oh, yeah. My spiritual master asked me to spread this message. And for some reason, I was always thinking of America rather than Europe. And so here I am. And that day went really well. I remember reading about that in the Lilamrita. And how...
Didn't he say he was inspired by it to come to America?
He felt always inspired to come to America, yeah.
He said he was attracted.
Attracted to America. Makes me feel patriotic. And he also invoked our patriotism. He always would say, what's the use of your being an American if you don't do something wonderful for Krishna? And then most of the time he would say, you're not American, you're not Indian, you're not your body. But then playing on our natural affection for our own country and our own body, he would say, If you're Indian, it's natural. You should be a devotee of Krishna. And if you're an American, it's natural. You should do something wonderful. All right, so probably right around, I'm in the second canto in our reading, and just by chance, we happen to be studying the four main verses of the Bhagavatam, which play right into what's going on here. It's the same story. Back then it was being told by Shukadev Goswami, speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, explaining how Brahma meditates, then gets a revelation. He sees Krishna. Krishna comes and greets him by shaking his hand. Now here, it's the same story being told by Maitreya to Vidura in the third canto. So, all the verses leading up to this describe what Brahma sees. Anybody remember any of the descriptions of what Brahma saw?
He saw the five causes of creation.
He saw the five causes of creation. Do you remember what those are? It was five causes. It's not mentioned in the...
No, it's not. Okay. No one could make a reference to where you saw
them. Uh-huh. What there is, it's one of the last purports that Prabhupada has written in the 10th canto, and it talks about Brahma again, when he sees all of the cows, that and cowherd boys that he had taken away, and he comes back and they're still there, and then he sees them manifesting Vishnu forms, and then he sees Krishna manifested as Vishnu, and then he sees these five things, and it's a really long technical purport, and within that purport is the little snip that you see in the video of Prabhupada in Your Ever Well Wisher, where he's lying on his bed and you can barely hear his voice, and he says, everything is acting, moving by the supreme direction of Krishna. This consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. And so, like, you're reading this long technical purport, and how did he do that? He was fully present. His body was mostly gone, but his consciousness was fully there. He was writing deep technical purports. And it talks about karma. Let's see, our impetus to act, time. Anyway, it's been a while since I read that one.
But that causes of action.
It could be, yeah.
Oh, we were wondering about five causes of creation.
You mentioned that verse yesterday.
Yeah, but that was the five causes of action.
Time, place.
Yes. Yeah, there's a different list in the Bhagavad Gita, the five factors of action. Anybody know that one? Okay. Yeah, well, I don't know. I like all of these distractions because they always, they bring it up to the point. They always come to some wonderful conclusion. So we'll just jump right in. Well, there's this description. It said he saw the Lord and he saw Anantashesh, who looked like, Anantashesh looked like several snow-capped mountains with gold on top. A golden mountain, and so like you got snow, and then on top there's a little gold. So Anantashesh has all of these golden helmets. What Brahma saw was really big. So it's mostly being compared to mountains. All right. I'm tempted to go back because it's just so, as a sandalwood tree is decorated with fragrant flowers and branches, the Lord's body was decorated with valuable jewels and pearls. He was the self-situated tree, the Lord of all others in the universe. And as a sandalwood tree is covered with many snakes, So the Lord's body was also covered by the hoods of Ananta. Like a great mountain, the Lord stands as the abode of all moving and non-moving living entities. He is the friend of the snakes, because Lord Ananta is his friend. As a mountain has thousands of golden peaks, so the Lord was seen with the thousands of golden helmeted hoods of Ananta, Naga. And as a mountain is sometimes filled with jewels, so also his transcendental body was fully decorated with valuable jewels. As a mountain is sometimes submerged in the ocean water, so the Lord is sometimes submerged in the water of devastation. Lord Brahma, thus looking upon the Lord in the shape of a mountain, concluded that he was Hari, the personality of Godhead. He saw that the garland of flowers on his chest glorified him with Vedic wisdom and sweet songs and looked very beautiful. He was protected by the Sudarshan wheel for fighting, and even the sun, moon, air, fire, etc., could not have access to him. And then it says, being surcharged with the mode of passion, Lord Brahma became inclined to create. And after seeing the five causes of creation indicated by the personality of Godhead, he began to offer his respectful prayers on the path of the creative mentality. And so here he is. He's instilled with the mode of passion. That's his job. He's the deity of the mode of passion. When the demons and the demigods were churning the ocean of milk to produce the nectar, it's mentioned that the Lord infused the demigods with the mode of goodness, infused the demons with the mode of passion, and Vasuki, the snake, who was wrapped around the mountain and was being pulled, that must have been somewhat painful. He was infused with the mode of ignorance, and I imagine that's to help him tolerate the pain. So Krishna infuses us with modes of nature to accomplish things. Here we go, text one. And I'm going to read the translation so we get some idea of what all this Sanskrit is saying. Lord Brahma said, O my Lord, today, after many, many years of penance, I have come to know about you. Oh, how unfortunate the embodied living entities are that they are unable to know your personality. My Lord, you are the only knowable object because there is nothing supreme beyond you. If there is anything supposedly superior to you, it is not the absolute. You exist as the supreme by exhibiting the creative energy of matter. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Brahmovacha. Yato simedya suchirannanu deha bhajam. So this word, this line, we're going to break it apart, and I'm not going to do it with all the lines, but gyato, what does that mean? Knowledge, yes. So known is the way it's translated here. Gyatosime shuchiran nanu deha bhajam. So gyata, it corresponds to the first sentence of the translation. Oh my Lord, today, after many, many years of penance, I've come to know about you. So you could think of that while reciting that first line. Gyatosime. Okay, yeah, we got the word for word here. Gyata, known, asi, you are, me, by me, adya, today, suchirat, after a long time. Nanu, but, deha bhajan, so now that's going into the next line, but people who are embodied, they are unable to know your personality, and how unfortunate is that? That's the next line. So, gyatosime dhyasuchiran, So after a long time, I'm seeing you. And how long of the time was it? How many years?
100 years,
okay. One place it says 100, and in another place it says 1,000. Whatever it is, it's a really long time. And these are demigod years or Lord Brahma years. What did it says 100 here? So, because we're studying the second canto, there it says it's 1,000 years he does austerity. Just thinking of two syllables. But then it also says he was given the 18th syllable Krishna mantra, which is the second to the last of the Gayatri mantras that we chant. Gyato simedya suchiran nanudeha bhajan. Na gyayate bhagavato gatiritya vadyam. Nanyat tvadasti bhagavan apitanna shuddham. Maya guna vyatikarad yadurur vibhasi. Gyatosi medya suchiran nanudeha bhajam. Na gyayate bhagavato gatiritya vadyam. Nanyad dvadasti bhagavan apitanna shuddham. Maya guna vyatikarad yadurur vibhasi. Asti bhagavan apitanna shuddham. Maya guna vyatikara yad urur vibhasi. Ladies. Gyatosi medya suchiran nanudeha bhajam. Na gyayate bhagavato gatiritya vadyam. Nanyad tvadasti bhagavan apitanna shuddham. Maya guna vyatikarad yadurur vibhasi.
Yeah.
Yatosi medya suchiranam deha bhajam. Na jayate bhagavato gatirithya vadyam. Namyatvarasti bhagavan apitam na shudham. Maya guna gatika rajyadurur vibhasi. Yato si me jasuchiran manu deha bhajam. Na jayate bhagavato gatiritya vadyam. Na nyadvarasti bhagavan apitanna shuddhan. Maya guna vyatika radya durur vibhasi. Brahma vacha. Lord Brahma said. Nyata, known, asi, you are, me, by me, adya, today, suchirat, after a long time. So, corresponding to the first sentence of the translation, Lord Brahma said, O my Lord, today, after many, many years of penance, I've come to know about you. The next line is, Oh, how unfortunate the embodied living entities are that they are unable to know your personality. So, nanu, but, deha bhajam, of one who has a material body. Na, not. Gyayate, is known. Bhagavata, of the personality of Godhead. Gati, course. Iti, so it is. Avadyam, great offense. And now we're going into the next sentence of the translation. My Lord, you are the only knowable object because there is nothing supreme beyond you. So, na anyat, none beyond. Twat, you, asti, there is, Bhagavan, O my Lord, api, even though there is, tat, anything that may be, na, never, shuddham, absolute. Okay, now that's the next line. My Lord, you're the only knowable object because there's nothing supreme beyond you. And now we're going into, if there is anything supposedly superior to you, it is not the absolute. You exist as the supreme by exhibiting the creative energy of matter. Okay, so maya, material energy, guna vyati karat, because of the mixture of the modes of yat, to which, uru, transcendental, vibhasi, you are. And I'll read the translation. Lord Brahma said, O my Lord, today after many, many years of penance, I've come to know about you. Oh, how unfortunate the embodied living entities are that they are unable to know your personality. My Lord, you're the only knowable object because there is nothing supreme beyond you. If there is anything supposedly superior to you, it is not the absolute. You exist as the supreme by exhibiting the creative energy of matter. So a lot of this is taken right from the four main verses of the Bhagavatam. These points given here in this prayer. And Prabhupada focuses mostly on the second sentence, Oh, how unfortunate the embodied living entities are that they are unable to know your personality. So here, it appears like he's feeling pity. But then in the verse, Prabhupada says it's almost like he's criticizing them. He's condemning them. And there's this word, avadyam, in the Sanskrit, which is translated as great offense. Na gyayate bhagavato gatir ityavadyam. So I'm not really sure how that fits in. It's due to their offenses that they don't know him, or it's an offense that they don't know him. Prabhupada begins the purport with two really powerful sentences. Here we go. The highest peak of the ignorance of the living entities, who are conditioned by material bodies, is that they are unaware of the supreme cause of the cosmic manifestation. Different people have different theories regarding the supreme cause, but none of them are genuine. Okay, so what's the highest peak of ignorance of living entities?
Unaware of the supreme cause,
yeah. Kind of have to read it to get it. I had to read that sentence a few times over. To really understand the purport, you kind of have to memorize each sentence as you go along to really follow what Prabhupada's saying here. And so here we go. We'll just run with it. I'll read it again. The highest peak of the ignorance of the living entities who are conditioned by material bodies is that they are unaware of the supreme cause of the cosmic manifestation. That becomes the theme of this, the rest of the purport. That, all right, he's right there. Hello. How can you miss it? And what we've been reading in, if I have time, I'm going to open up some of these purports that Prabhupada wrote on the four main shlokas. And I'm going to risk putting everyone to sleep by discussing the four main shlokas of the Bhagavatam. Because it is really important. This is what the whole Bhagavatam is expanded from. And the reason this is important, Brahma meeting Krishna, Brahma performing austerities, meeting Krishna, seeing Krishna directly, hearing from Krishna, asking Krishna questions, shaking hands with Krishna. This is how we here in illusion are able to reach transcendence. Here is the first being who's actually doing it. It shows it can be done. He's doing it. Then he passes it down through parampara, disciplic succession, and Prabhupada again and again is saying, look at it. Brahma, this is a real important point that Prabhupada brings up in a purport. He says, we don't see Brahma becoming Krishna, neither do we see Narada becoming Krishna, or talking about becoming Krishna. We don't see Narada's disciple Vyasadeva talking about becoming Krishna, or Shukadeva Goswami. Where has this come from? And Prabhupada just blows up in his purports, condemning everybody. And you start wondering, like, is there anybody that he likes? He's cutting everyone down, but he has to. Where is this? He keeps bringing this up. Why? Where has this come from? Where has this crazy idea come from that the purpose of the Vedas is to become God? The Vedas don't state that. They state it indirectly, that we are like God, but Prabhupada just keeps hammering on the same point. Okay, so he's going to do a little bit of that here. Okay, next sentence. Different people have different theories regarding the supreme cause, but none of them are genuine. Well, that's a big, broad, and bold statement, just sweeping, pushing everything off the table. It's all wrong. All of your theories, just knock them off the table. Here's what's going on. The only supreme cause is Vishnu, and the intervening impediment is the illusory energy of the Lord. Another three sentences in a row, really powerful, full of substance, full of content. You could memorize those and think about them while you're hiking the Appalachian Trail for 2 months. And that would be enough to think about.
The only supreme cause is Vishnu, and their intervening impediment is the illusory energy of the Lord. The Lord has employed his wonderful material energy in manifesting many, many wonderful distractions in the material world, and the conditioned souls, illusioned by the same energy, are thus unable to know the supreme cause. This is right out of the Chatur Shloki. What's that? Number three, the one about reflection. Whatever you see that looks separate from me, you should understand it to be reflection in darkness. We went through this with our group, and we're like, why is this so important? Let's just try to put it in simple terms. What are these four verses saying? And now that we've studied them, it's fresh in my mind. I'm relating them to everything I read, and like, oh wow, it's everywhere in the Bhagavatam. First verse, Krishna says, everything is me. I existed before the creation. The creation is nothing but me. When the creation is done, I'm still here. Prabhupada gives 6 or 8 pages of purport, and then the last two sentences really sum it up. He says, one should be more interested in the root cause of everything than in the branches and leaves. Then the next sentence he says, that is the sum and substance of this verse. Be more interested in the root cause of everything than in the leaves and branches. So that's verse number one. Everything is Krishna. Krishna existed before creation. Creation is done. I continue to exist. Aham evasam evagre nanyad yat sad asatparam. The second one is, anybody know it? Just checking to see. I enter into everything. Is that right? Yeah, I enter into everything. Or is that the third one? Uh-oh, I'm in trouble now. Nobody knows. Where's Pran Govinda? All right, whichever one this is, second or third, I could open it up, but it's another one of the main verses that I enter into everything and then I don't. I think that's the third one. The second one is the reflection. If you see something that looks different, that appears to be superior to me, and that kind of comes up in this verse where Brahma, offering his prayer, says, if there is something supposedly superior to you, it is not the absolute. You exist as the supreme by exhibiting the creative energy of matter. If something appears to be separate from me, you should understand it to be a reflection in the darkness, my illusory energy. So everything is Krishna. If something appears different, it's a reflection. Then the next verse he says, I enter into everything. Just as the material elements enter into the creation, but they don't enter into it. So the five elements, earth, water, fire, they enter into everything, they create our bodies, but they are not our bodies. When our bodies are finished, they go back, they're conserved in the totality of earth, water, fire. They're just elements. They are not us. So in the same way, the Lord enters into the creation, but he does not enter into the creation. And in that purport, Prabhupada brings out some things that are relevant to this purport here. He says Krishna is everywhere, and he goes through a long list of people, educated people, and he says all of their knowledge is null and void. Sweep it off the table if they don't see Krishna everywhere. He says, he goes on and on condemning them. Says it's like keeping a cow that doesn't give milk. It's like having empty husks of rice that the rice has already been threshed out of it. It's useless. He goes on condemning them. He says all of their so-called knowledge is just decorations on a dead body. And he says all kinds of things that are even more harsh. And I was wondering, like, is there anybody that he likes, anybody that he respects? And somebody on our discussion said, well, he likes the six Goswamis, okay. There's six people that he likes. Okay, is there anybody else? He likes his guru. He likes Brahma, Narada. But it's the rest of the world, he's like, you people are all fools. But then he goes on saying that you can see Krishna in the creation. So again, this is the verse that says, Krishna says, I enter into the universe, but I don't. So Krishna is everywhere. And then he quotes Brahma Samhita, saying, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilavachanina, that you can see me everywhere if your eyes are, you've got the Premanjana, the Anjana, the salve of love on your eyes, then you can see Krishna everywhere as Shyamasundar. He quotes another verse showing how Krishna is everywhere. He quotes two more verses from Brahma Samhita. Ekopyasho Rachaitam Jagadandakotim, how Krishna enters into the Jagadandam universe, and then he enters into the Paramanu Chayantarastam. Paramanu means the smallest, the most, Anu means small, Parama means the supremely small, the atoms. He enters into the atoms. Then he also quotes Goloka Eva Nivasati Akilatma Bhuta. He's eternally present in Goloka, and yet he also is within the universe. So if you've got the right vision, if you take complete shelter of Krishna, then you can see Krishna everywhere. Otherwise, then I'm going to read part of that purport because it's so good, how he's just so sweeping and so heavily condemning of material knowledge. But let's see if we can get through this purport first. The Lord has employed his wonderful material energy in manifesting many, many wonderful distractions in the material world, and the conditioned souls, illusioned by the same energy, are thus unable to know the supreme cause. Oh, so the final verse, Krishna tells Brahma, you should search for it up to this point, in all times, in all places, in all circumstances. And in that purport, Prabhupada opens it up wide. He says, all circumstances means anybody, all kinds of living beings, even animals. So that's the same purport where he's criticized scientists, philosophers, sociologists, psychologists, philanthropists. It's all useless, like cows that don't give milk. The most stalwart scientists and philosophers, therefore, cannot be accepted as wonderful. They only appear wonderful because they are instruments in the hands of the illusory energy of the Lord. Under illusion, the general mass of people denies the existence of the Supreme Lord and accept the foolish products of illusory energy as supreme. One can know the supreme cause, the personality of Godhead, by the causeless mercy of the Lord, which is bestowed upon the Lord's pure devotees, like Brahma and those in the disciplic succession. I've been wondering, like, why is Prabhupada so critical all the time? Did we just, like, happen to get the most critical of all gurus? But is Vishwanath or the other acharyas before him, are they like this? Bhaktisiddhanta surely was. Is this, like, our tradition? And then I was thinking about Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Who would like to recite that? Okay, was she right? Is that right? Anya vilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttamam. And in there, if you've taken the course, what's it called? The Bhakti Shastri course. They talk about two aspects of that verse. Anybody remember that? Anybody taken that? I've never taken it. I've just sat with people taking it. The Swarup Lakshana and the Tatastha Lakshana. Anybody remember those? Okay. Tatastha Lakshana means this is what it is not. So the verse, half of the verse is talking about what bhakti is not. And the other half is the Swarup Lakshanam. This is what it is. So defining it by negation. So Anya Vilashita Shunyam. So it is not any kind of, bhakti is not any kind of desire that is covered by jnana or karma, a desire to get things or a desire to renounce the world. It's not either of those. Jnana karma jnana abritam. The only thing that it is anukulyena krishnanu shilanam. So it's a pure desire simply to give happiness to Krishna. That's bhakti. So his verse defining bhakti, half of it is this is what it's not. And only half of it is defining what it is. So Prabhupada's writing is pretty much sticking to that. It's pretty much half and half. Although sometimes it looks like 3/4 of it is, this is what it is not. He spends an awful lot of time defining what it's not. And when you clear that away, this is what it's not, then when you get to what it is, it becomes much more profound if you're really paying close attention. Otherwise it just gets tedious. Oh, here he goes again. Now he's condemning these people. Why is he always down on these people? And I was thinking, it seems like that's the way business is done in India. If you want to get a train ticket, you know, you have to hire someone to go, and because it's like you have to be aggressive to get up there and get it. If you want to get anything done in India, you have to yell at people. It really seems like that. And Prabhupada on his morning walks in India, his disciples are presenting, here are some of the things people are saying. And they're pretending to be those people. And I remember just a couple days ago, Achyutananda was really pushing Prabhupada on Mayavad philosophy, and and Prabhupada was enjoying it. He was getting angry and shouting at him. And Achyutananda was shouting too. He said, no, Krishna is only manifest in the material world in this way. When the Brahman is influenced by the gunas, then he becomes Krishna. And then as Krishna, he says these things. And Prabhupada is defeating all of those things with snap. Before he even finishes giving the argument, Prabhupada already knows what he's going to say. And he's saying, no, this is wrong because of this and this. And that's what those devotees had to deal with in India. They were actually dealing with people, and that's why Prabhupada's speaking out so strongly. Here in America, we're just thinking like, why is he doing this? Okay, so he's driving on the same point. One can know the supreme cause, the personality of Godhead, by the causeless mercy of the Lord. So that's an important point. We can't know Krishna on our own. We are entirely dependent on the causeless mercy of the Lord, which is bestowed upon the Lord's pure devotees like Brahma and those in his disciplic succession. Prabhupada keeps coming back to that same point. You need to get the causeless mercy of the Lord. You don't deserve it. It's causeless. The way to access it is through disciplic succession. You don't make up things on your own. By acts of penance only was Lord Brahma able to see the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and by realization only could he understand the Lord as he is. Brahma was extremely satisfied upon observing the magnificent beauty and opulence of the Lord, and he admitted that nothing can be comparable to him. Only by penance can one appreciate the beauty and opulence of the Lord, and when one is acquainted with that beauty and opulence, he is no longer attracted by any other This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2:59, param drishtva nivartate. Foolish human beings who do not endeavor to investigate the supreme beauty and opulence of the Lord are here condemned by Brahma. It is imperative that every human being try for such knowledge, and if anyone does not do so, his life is spoiled. Anything that is beautiful and opulent in the material sense is enjoyed by those living entities who are like crows. Now, where does he get this from the verse? Crows always engage in picking at rejected garbage, whereas the white ducks do not mix with the crows. Rather, they take pleasure in transparent lakes with lotus flowers, surrounded by beautiful orchards. Both crows and ducks are undoubtedly birds by birth, but they are not of the same feather. So where did he get that? I mean, that's not in the verse, but it's implied. It is. Okay, what did you find?
In the synonyms, it says great offense.
Yes.
So here, he's starting to say that Brahma condemns them.
Yes.
So that's not just unfortunate. That's not simply saying they're unfortunate. He's condemning them.
He's condemning them, or they are condemned. Yeah.
Offensive.
Yeah. It seems like it, yeah. So Brahma, because of the word avadyam, that's in his prayer. These people are condemned because they don't know you. And Prabhupada makes it that they're condemned because they don't even try, or they're not even willing to try. Prabhupada does that sometimes. When we're reading the Lord Nrsingadev's, the story of Lord Nrsingadev and the Prahlad speaking to his father is saying, and these rascals are so foolish and they're so condemned, and I was looking in the Sanskrit, and I don't see that in there. I think it's just Prabhupada, like, just getting enthusiastically condemning these people. Okay, so this last paragraph of the purport. Foolish human beings who do not endeavor to investigate the supreme beauty and opulence of the Lord are here condemned by Brahma. It is imperative that every human being try for such knowledge, and if anyone does not do so, his life is spoiled. Anything that is beautiful and opulent in the material sense is enjoyed by those living entities who are like crows. Crows always engage in picking at rejected garbage, whereas the white ducks do not mix with the crows. Rather, they take pleasure in transparent lakes with lotus flowers, surrounded by beautiful orchards. Both crows and ducks are undoubtedly birds by birth, but they are not of the same feather. And so that's a reference to Canto 1, Narada's instructions to Vyasadeva. What is that, chapter 5? Tadvayasa Tirtham, the one about the literature for crows. And then the next one is literature for swans. Now, here, I gotta read this. I apologize for reading so much, but it's just so good. This is from Etavad Eva Jigyasam, Tattva Jigyasunatmana, Anvaya Vyatare Kavyam, Yatsyat Sarvatra Sarvada. A person who is searching for the absolute truth must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. And here Prabhupada is criticizing people with a good education or a good fertile brain. Revealed scriptures give directions directly to this end, but because the bewildered living entities are blinded by the glaring reflection in the darkness, they are unable to find the truth of the revealed scriptures. So the glaring reflection, they're bewildered by the glaring reflection in the darkness. He referred to that in the purport, that they see all kinds of wonderful things manifested in the world. We get distracted by that. Okay, later on in this purport, I'm in the second canto, I don't expect you to jump to that. Because the so-called great leaders of human society are ignorant of this great knowledge of bhakti yoga and are always engaged in, okay, catch some of these words Prabhupada's using against the material so-called brilliant people. They're always engaged in ignoble acts of sense gratification. Ignoble acts of sense gratification. Bewildered by the external energy of the Lord, they are stubborn rebels against the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they never agree to surrender unto Him because they are fools, miscreants, the lowest type of human beings. So four, five, six, seven things he said already. It's just, that's in one sentence. He's just pounding them. Fools, miscreants, lowest type of human beings. Such faithless non-believers may be highly educated in the material sense of the term, but factually they are the greatest fools of the world because of the influence of the external material nature. All their so-called acquisition of knowledge has been made null and void. It's like, okay, 11 big things so far. Therefore, all advancement of knowledge in the present context of things is being misused by cats and dogs fighting with one another for sense gratification. And all acquisition of knowledge in science, philosophy, fine arts, nationalism, economic development, religion, and great activities are being spoiled by being used as dresses for dead men. He's really giving it to him. There is no utility in the dresses used for covering a coffin of a dead body, save getting false applause from the ignorant public. The Srimad Bhagavatam therefore says again and again that without attainment of the status of bhakti yoga, all the activities of human society are to be considered absolute failures. Wouldn't it be great to memorize that and to be able to just throw it at someone at just the right moment when they're a little off balance, and one by one pounding them, his mind will be overwhelmed in the whirlpool of matter. Okay, but then I want to get to the point where, because this verse says, Anvayad Vyatari Kabyam, directly and indirectly, one should search for the Lord in all situations, all circumstances. And so he quotes Jiva Goswami saying, this means all people. So then he starts saying, lowest of human beings can be elevated to the highest stage of devotional life if they are trained by the bona fide spiritual master, well versed in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. He quotes several verses from Bhagavatam saying the same point. But let's see. Then he starts getting into quoting the Garuda Purana saying, even the worms, birds, and beasts are assured of elevation to the highest perfectional life if they are completely surrendered to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So what to speak of the philosophers among the human beings? There is no need to seek properly qualified candidates for discharging devotional service to the Lord. Let them be either well-behaved or ill-trained. Let them be either learned or fools. Let them be either grossly attached or in the renounced order of life. Let them be liberated souls or desirous of salvation. Let them be inexpert in the discharge of devotional service or expert in the same. All of them can be elevated to the supreme position by discharging devotional service under the proper guidance. Those are Prabhupada's words. He's not quoting a verse there. He's just saying it's open to everybody. Let's see if I can find. Oh yeah, here we go. Then he quotes Apichet Sudaracharo, even if a person is fully addicted to all sorts of sinful acts, if he happens to be engaged in the loving transcendental service to the Lord, under proper guidance, he is to be considered the most perfect holy man without a doubt. And thus any person, whatsoever and whosoever he or she may be, the dull mercantile man, or even a man lower than all these, can attain the highest perfection of life by going back home back to Godhead, provided he or she takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in all earnestness. This sincere earnestness is the only qualification that can lead one to the highest perfectional stage of life. And unless and until such earnestness is aroused, there is a difference between cleanliness or uncleanliness, learning or non-learning in the material estimation. Fire is always fire, and thus if someone touches the fire knowingly or unknowingly, the fire will act in its own way without discrimination. Okay, I'll stop there. Yes?
Like those people, that he just likes. He thinks Goswami is, or you know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He actually loves everyone in the highest love, but he's just criticizing the activities. I can remember even hearing it of what he would bring up Samarasco, you know, I don't know, so many of them. And Prabhupada, he wouldn't say anything about the person, but he would say, what is their philosophy? And then what is it? Oh, well, you know, this is wrong and that's wrong. He would destroy the philosophy. Isn't that true, though?
Yeah, good. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, that is real important. He's just really down on that mentality. Why do you refuse to just accept what's right in front of you? Why do you take the obvious and distort it? He brought it up in the purport we read today. The most stalwart scientists and philosophers cannot be accepted as wonderful. They only appear wonderful because they are instruments in the hands of the illusory energy of the Lord. They're just creating more illusions. And let's see, I was listening to One Morning Walk, and Prabhupada was asking a devotee, so why would you want to compromise with someone? And the devotee, I didn't hear exactly what the devotee said, but he wasn't emphatic enough. And Prabhupada just got on him as if he said, yes, we'll compromise. Prabhupada said, why should you compromise? Our situation is strong. Our situation is firm. We are 100% correct in our presentation. We do not have to make any compromise. And the devotee said, well, maybe just to get along with someone. Prabhupada said, no, there's no question of compromise, and we can still keep friendship with them. If you make an enemy by not compromising, that's your problem. That's your fault. You have to be expert enough to not compromise and still keep friendship with these people. We don't need to compromise to keep friends, is what he was saying. It was so good.
Wow. That's an art. Yeah. Hey, just backing up what Sukadev says.
Yeah.
Hate the sin, but not the sinner. And it feels like when Prabhupada is speaking so strongly, it's because of his urgency. He's actually understanding that these people are on their way to hell, to suffering, unlimited suffering. So he's really feeling urgent.
Thank you. Yeah, he's feeling for him. And another thing, he keeps saying, surrender to Krishna, take shelter of Krishna. And we were talking about, what does that mean, to take shelter? And what do you do when you're having a rough day? If you're feeling down, you're angry, some people take shelter of
ice cream,
or donuts, or a punching bag. Or they'll go out, they'll just take a walk. They'll just splurge on watching movies or something, some way. So where do we go to? So it's like, that's what we're taking shelter of. And yeah, it's good to take a walk or play music or talk to a friend. But to take shelter of Krishna means, when I'm in trouble, where do I go for help? And yeah, you could open up the book or just start. You could say, oh, Krishna. And not just say, oh, Krishna, but really feelingly say, oh, Krishna. What now? What are you doing? What do you want me to do here? Okay, yeah, so taking shelter of Krishna, and that's what Prabhupada is driving at. And he was saying, even if you're a worm, he was quoting some really far out things. The Garuda Purana says, if you're a worm or a bird or some other animal, if you just feelingly turn to Krishna, you're better than all of those other people that Prabhupada was saying, utter failures. Okay.
On the same point, I was thinking that, yes, Prabhupada's words are so strong, but then his actions really show what is his mood. Because somebody could be saying such strong words and the actions may show that they're just putting somebody down. But Prabhupada's actions showed that he was willing to go so much to help these people that he's criticizing. And so I think that's a very important thing to see about Srila Prabhupada, his words and his actions. So his actions really show his compassion, willing to do anything, I mean anything. It's just amazing to these people that he's saying they're like crows or whatever they are, you know, or stubborn rebels, or, you know, so many words he used. The same people, so he actually shows that he really loves them, not just the Goswamis, but he actually cares and has affection for them.
Yes, and he's going to all the trouble to tell them that all their advancement of knowledge in the present context of things is being misused by cats and dogs fighting with one another for sense gratification. And all acquisition of knowledge in science, philosophy, fine arts, nationalism, economic development, religion, and great activities are being spoiled by being used as dresses for dead men. So he's taking the trouble to say that. I mean, he's not just saying it to be mean. He's like, he's trying to help him out. And I was here the day when you gave class on Ram Nomi. And that was something that there's the quotation from, it's quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when Lord Ramachandra says, if someone just says, I surrender unto you, then I will take care of that person forever, no matter who they are, no matter what they've done. And that was in reference to Vibhishana. And he also says, even if Ravana himself comes to me and says, I surrender to you, I'll take care of Ravana. He will become, what's the word that he'll be my ward, or? Anyway, I'll protect him in all ways.
All right, I'm wondering, is it a bad thing to be critical of people who are criticizing other people being critical? I mean, Pushkar does it all the time, but you don't get a sense he doesn't like you.
It depends.
Yes. Oh, here's another small
thing. I'll put that clause out.
If someone's depends. Like, if well, yeah, she should give the point. She's realization. If someone's about to drive off the cliff, I mean, what are you supposed to say? Have a nice journey. Make sure you wear the seatbelt.
Yeah. To have a critical mentality is said to be, let's see, where is that? Nindadi Shunya. That's on the list of things to be avoided. That's to be free from the desire of criticizing others. Prabhupada's taken on that service. But to criticize devotees is, that's not so good.
So, this reminds me how important it is to study the person Bhagavat as well as the book Bhagavat. Because in so many cases, Prabhupada may say something, but then he's, like Madhavati mentioned, his actions showed something completely different. Like in the Bhagavatam, it may say certain things against women, but we see how Prabhupada was with his women disciples, so loving and so accommodating in so many ways. So, the person Bhagavat cannot be underestimated. You know, we should study it and see what he does in different situations to really put a whole light, you know, on each situation.
Broad perspective, yes.
Very, very good to put it in that succinct point that Madhumati made, because Prabhupada could have just sent his books to America. That would have been far more than what any of his godbrothers had done. But he came himself, and these memoirs and all of his biography, they show us that side, the person Bhagavat. Yeah, the mood, it's so rich, yeah, and complete.
Came himself and brought, and showed this is what a devotee looks like. This is what they do, and speaking of going places, this was another conversation. He was in Nellore, India. Some Indian man was talking with him about someone. It sounded like it may have been one of Prabhupada's godbrothers that was criticizing Prabhupada and the movement. And he said he was, in what that guy said was that it had been banned in Japan. The movement had been banned in Japan. And Prabhupada said, at least we're in Japan. He's not doing anything. At least we've been in Japan, so we can get banned. And another devotee said, but we weren't banned. Prabhupada said, that's another thing. I'm making my point here. at least we're going places. This guy's just sitting here and complaining. So was there something else?
Breakfast.
Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.